I'm Kevin Davis, and this is the Catholic Family Podcast. Thank you all very much for being with us here today. I'm joined by a good friend of the show, Father Stephen McKenna. Everyone should know him by now. He is our go-to priest for difficult subjects. And well, Father has picked another one today, another difficult one, but another extremely, extremely important one. And it's covering how children should behave during Mass. And yeah, I'd say even more importantly, how do parents get their children to behave? Or what do you teach them to get them to that point? And it really is something that I think if anyone wants to watch this show, maybe afterwards or even before, go watch a show I did with Father Benedict about the dignity of the Mass, you know, the respect that we owe the Mass itself and what it means. What is the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass? Because I think maybe that's a good place to start. And then you can go into this talk from Father, where I'm sure Father will talk about that as well. But Father Benedict Hughes gave a really in-depth discussion about that. And I think that, to me, that really helps. Like, okay, this isn't messing around. This is something that's deeply important and that we should all take very seriously, which, of course, I'm not saying anybody doesn't. But anyway, Father, I'm looking forward to it. And I know there are people already kind of shrinking down in their seats, like, oh boy, okay, do we really want to listen to this? But please, everyone, you know Father by now. Father, he's going to shoot straight, but he's a pretty nice guy as well. So I know Father will bring his normal wisdom to the show. So Father, without further ado, please.
Thank you very much, Kevin. It's good to be here, as always. So it's something that I think every single priest out there and has many experiences with, and we always feel sort of a little bit torn as to whether to say something, whether to not say something. Is somebody going to be, you know, upset, or is somebody going to take it well, or whatever it may be? I think most parents out there generally want to do the right thing for their kids, and so this is what this is. This is an informational. I figured that this is a means of giving information about how and what to do with dealing with kids, young kids at attending at Mass, and how to go about making sure that you're giving them that appreciation for the Mass, teaching them about that Mass, teaching them the proper behavior, and also maintaining charity for those inside the church and all of that, the other people that are in the church as well. I think the number one important thing to say for parents to understand is that oftentimes people get worried about, oh, am I missing part of Mass, or I never feel like I'm being able to attend Mass well, or, you know, I feel like I'm, you know, like I, you know, these things, and they're, you know, they sort of know their duty, but they're bothered by the fact that, you know, sometimes they have to go out, sometimes they have to miss large portions, sometimes they might even miss the principal parts of the Mass, which are, of course, the offertory, the consecration, and the priest's communion, the three parts that are essential to be attentive to in order to fulfill one's Sunday obligation, to be said to have actually attended Mass. You have to be present for those three pieces. Now, and so people worry about that, you know, can I receive communion because I have to go out during the offertory, or, you know, something along those lines. And the answer is yes, you can receive communion. You don't have to consider yourself not having attended Mass, because there's still a moral presence there as you have to go out in the vestibule, or even further away, depending on how noisy of a problem it becomes. And that's fine. You know, that's not what we're talking about in terms of being necessitated to be there. Moreover, parents should also take great consolation in the fact that that they are receiving the graces of attending Mass by doing their duty with their children. Because Father Valancourt used to always put it this way: God made your babies, and he made babies to cry. And so therefore, it shouldn't surprise God that you have to take a crying baby outside of the church. So don't worry about it too much. And that's so true. It's so, when you break it down into those, it's funny, but it's also very true. Like when you break it down into simplistic terms, that's exactly how God made babies to be. And so a parent doing their duty, taking their child out, they're actually they're doing what God wants them to do, and it's very pleasing to Him, and He rewards it with great graces and fruits for your spiritual growth and everything, just like as if you were attending Mass itself. In fact, if it's when we're negligent on these duties and these things that we start to miss out on graces, actually, because that's what God calls us to do. He calls us to do the duties of our state of life. And it's not always what we want to do. It's not always what is the most pleasant thing for us to do. And it's not always the most, seemingly rewarding thing to do. In actuality, of course, it is, but it's not always naturally inclined towards us. And so this is just sort of that little bit of instruction on those things. So what are some of the key points? I think we start off with this this understanding. If you have small children, babies or toddlers, or somebody that that it's not unreasonable that you might have to say, I might have to take this child out of the church at some point during a Mass. The first key is sit in the back of the church. Sit in the back of the church. Sit in, make sure that you have easy access to the aisle, even if you can't sit in the back, the very back, and your few rows forward. Do not lock yourself in four people deep, pushed up against the wall either. Sit on the aisle. Even if somebody comes to your row and says, oh, the church is full, can I sit? You have some space next to you. Can you sit here? Just almost think of it as like you're on an airplane, you are assigned an aisle seat. Get up, step back, let them go in, and then reassume your seat near the aisle. And if they ask why, you say, well, I might have to take the little one out. Do you mind if I just stay here? Nobody's going to say, yeah, I hate sitting, 4 feet deep into the pew. That's just not going to happen. Especially if they're going to appreciate that you're going to take your kid out if he starts to cry or something like that. And that's important reality. So first is just strategic seating. Think ahead, think that where you're going to sit. Some places reserve the back pews for parents and families. Some places don't. But if you're watching this and you don't have small children, out of courtesy to those who do, leave those spots open. You want them, out of courtesy to you being able to pray during Mass, to take their kids out. You, in return, out of courtesy to them, should not sit in the very back. It's that simple, really. Makes that's sense. I think a little bit of charity in both directions goes a long way in doing these things. So that's the first point. The second point is, now we'll get into, I want to start off by talking more about, so that's sort of like some of the general aspects towards it, right? Now I want to start getting to specifics of, I don't think you can't treat all children the same. So you have to think, okay, what kind of child is my child? And so the first group I want to deal with is like babies. So obviously with babies, they're just being babies. And so there's nothing to get upset about. There's nothing for other people to get upset about, and there's nothing to worry about. You mentioned at the beginning of the show that or before the show we went on air, that that, you know, how it's, you know, some think that it's a good sign that to have a bunch of babies in a church. And I agree 100%. You know, there's the old saying, if your chapel's not crying, it's dying. And it's so true. You know, we want big families. We want children to be there. That is the future of the church. That is the lifeblood of the faith. You know, it continues on through kids, and that's the fruit of marriages and the general populace of the church. So we love children. You know, that this show should never be taken to be anti-child. This is pro, we are pro baby. So with that, don't worry that your kid cries. That's perfectly fine. But do be ready to think of just the charity towards other people. There are other people there that are trying to pray. There's a priest that's trying to focus on the Mass. And so, you know, you think to yourself, okay, this noise that's interrupting that, I need to remove that from that situation as best I can, for until I can calm them down or satiate them in some sort of way.
And just real quickly, Father, to mention that, or to get your opinion, I've seen this especially with babies a few times, that the mother takes the baby, and I think the natural instinct is to go shh, which I think, of course, if it's for a couple seconds and you're walking the baby out, it's fine. But I've actually seen it where the mother will just sit there, you know, and just continuously going shh. And I remember one time I was serving on the altar, and I was just like, I almost couldn't even hear it anymore. You know, it was just like this. It was almost, I think it was more distracting to me than the baby crying. I think maybe that's, I don't know if you feel the same, but I think that some of these times you just, as you say, maybe just get up and
sleeping
or something.
I think it's always good to sort of point out the difference between like a distracting noise and, you know, incidental noise. So a baby that sort of coos a little bit or makes maybe like starts to fuss and you give it like the shh and it actually quiets down, that's fair game. Like, you know, like don't feel like at the immediate instance that your child starts. Some people take it too far, I think. Mm-hmm. I've seen plenty of them that they almost, the parents almost miss all of the Mass, but not necessarily by necessity. They think, well, you know, that if I just got to stay out here because the baby might start making noise, or it's making just these light kind of little bits of like occasional noise. Those don't distract me. Those don't distract people praying. Those things are just, that's just life. You know, that's just part of anything. And so that's not what we're talking about here, you know. And yeah, if somebody, you know, shushes a baby once or to try to, like, you know, kind of like just gives it a little shot to see, okay, if I can calm it down in the next second or two, then okay. But once you realize like that didn't work, well, then the next step is to go outside and then continue to try to calm the baby down. And you can come back in as soon as you're done. And that's the thing about that is that nobody, especially if you're sitting in the back, but even if you have to sit, you know, a little bit further forward or whatever, nobody cares how many times you go in and out. We want you to come back into the church. Don't feel like you have to live in the vestibule. Don't feel like you're sort of like banished to the outside, and you know, you have to just like sit there shivering looking through the window or something like that. That it's, no, we want you to come back in, and we don't care if you come back in 15 times. Like that's fine. I would say the only exception being if it's the middle of the sermon, because of the fact that coming back into the chapel, you know, we try to make rules for our chapels at least, and I think probably other places probably do the same, that if somebody has to leave during the sermon or is outside the chapel during the sermon, to come back in during that time is very distracting to the priest trying to keep a train of thought and trying to preach. And sometimes it can really throw off the entire, I know for me, it can oftentimes throw off the entire sermon. And I think we talked about it before when we're talking about like general sort of like behavior at mass or something like that. If I have a vague recollection of that, but yeah, I just think that, I think that the coming in during the sermon is distracting, but otherwise anytime during mass, just come back in. It's perfectly fine. Nobody minds at all. Nobody's looking at you askance. And if they do, then that's their problem. You know, like, don't worry about it, but shouldn't be. And most people have had children and they know, you know, and so that's perfectly fine. Babies are going to cry. And that's why I say, you know, like I said, the little coo, don't worry about, but you know, if it becomes a more consistent noise or if it becomes louder, they start to cry or whatever, then just, you know, just get up and go. And that's perfectly fine. You're doing exactly what God wants you to do when you walk out that door to take care of the duty that you have to do. So that's that aspect. You also, you know, it can be frustrating, but I come back to it again, you know, don't fret about, like, it's not the baby's fault. It's, you know, it's just a fact of life. Sometimes they're hungry. Sometimes they're just uncomfortable. Sometimes, you know, myriad of other baby issues or whatever they could be. Sometimes they just want to make noise, and you know, they all of a sudden they realize that they have a voice. Sometimes that's a funny thing. Sometimes they realize for the first time that if they make a noise, it echoes, and they like that reality. Oh, it echoes in the church, and they start doing it more and more and more because they can
future priest. Yeah,
so yeah, or choir member anyways. Right. And so, you know, and so that's, and so like, so like, it's just a reality. It is what it is. Nobody's upset about it. Don't worry about it, but do, you know, think about the other people and do, you know, just kind of walk out, and then when you can, come back in. And so I think that type of mentality towards little children, little babies, you know, ones that you can't really expect any kind of, you know, cooperation training to go along with, you know, like that's just what it is. Don't fret about any of those things. It's hard in the missions, you know, because missions are small, and sometimes there might not be a real like great places to take the kids, and you know, just do the best you can in those situations. And everybody understands when you are in a mission type of situation. But in a church, you know, we usually try to facilitate in various ways. You know, here at St. Gertrude's, there's a vestibule area, and we keep the speakers out there for where they can hear pickups from the altar. There's like a little altar mic there, so they can hear pickups to hear what part of the mass they're in, and then also they can hear the entirety of the sermon. We even have like a little wall heater that heats the vestibule up nice in the winter time, so that the kids can stay warm and things like that, and whatnot. You know, and then we even keep a door for the classrooms. Like if the kid really starts, like you have like total meltdown moment, you can go from the vestibule through to one of the classrooms, and the doors open for that on Sundays, so that, you know, if you really needed some privacy or really needed to, like, oh boy, like this is really, really noisy, and the wall and door is not going to take care of that, you know, then you need more layers.
Add that before.
Yeah, you can get those layers if you need them. So there's, you know, and at St. Hugh, our vestibule there has a little bit of like glass, so that usually you can see through that. And we just added a television down in the basement, where we will have the live stream playing, because St. Hugh is much smaller, and so people, you know, you can only put so many people in the vestibule, and then on top of it, if the, you know, it's only going to stop the noise so much, and parents sometimes go down to nurse, or they go down to change a diaper, or if the kid's really being loud, then they'll go downstairs. Well, then it's hard for them. There is a speaker for the sermon in the vestibule at St. Hugh, but you know, if you're not in sight of that, then it might be hard to tell, like, for instance, when communion time is and stuff. So we try to facilitate what we can in those moments. And I think most priests, most churches try to do the same, you know, like if they can have some sort of means that you can still keep an eye on what's going on or hear what's going on to some degree. But like I said, small churches and missions and newer chapels and things like that, you know, it takes time to eventually get there. But maybe that's the thing. Like as Father Chicada used to, when we first started live streaming, people would have these ideas like, oh, well, you know, we need to have a camera on the pulpit and a camera on the choir and a camera on the from, you know, different angles. And he's like, oh, maybe if you want to donate the cameras and donate the technology, then right. maybe we'll do right. that. But, you know, exactly. and then if you want to donate your time to switching back and forth between them, and then, you know, just nobody really kind of took him up on that, obviously.
I'm sorry, Father, I got to continue. I know we got to keep moving on, but real quickly, because I think that's such a good point. Mm-hmm. I've had people comment on that. Like Omaha, you know, people love Bishop Pivarunas's, you know, his sermons, and they don't have any equipment. And I've seen people, you know, okay, yeah, why aren't there more sermons from the bishop? And it's exactly what you said, Father. And I know that for a fact. I know people who would set it up. You know, you gotta pay for it. So if anyone wants to do that, please, you can contact me. I will make sure you get that money to a setup, because I think there are so many priests who don't have these things that absolutely should. It would be a beautiful thing to have more of their sermons. I mean, Bishop Pivarunas being a prime example. So definitely, you know, hit me up if you want to contribute to that. I'll get you in contact with Father Borja and get that going. But yeah, great, that's a great point, Father.
And same thing, yeah. Like I said, and if your parish doesn't have a speaker in the vestibule, so you have to take a kid out and you can't hear the sermon anymore or something like that, well, maybe that's something you start thinking about. Maybe it's not just you, but maybe you and other families of kids think, okay, if we have four or five of us together, we can save up and put in just a very inexpensive speaker system that is there so that we can hear a sermon being given by the priest while we're out there, you know. So, and it takes time and do it with wherewithal, but you know, it's, I think most priests want to facilitate to some degree, you know, of that aspect. And so like I said, babies, don't fret about it. Babies are what babies are. That's how God made them. He made you their parents, you know, and it's part of your duty and it's part of charity. And so charity reigns supreme, and that's where your graces are going to come from, is from doing that. So even if you feel like if a kid has just a terrible time and he's just crying galore, and you think, I didn't even see any of the mass at all, you know, I don't even know if it happened, you know, you got all of those graces and then some because of that, and you don't have to fret about, you know, anything along those lines. You've done exactly what you're supposed to do.
I just like how you said, Father, charity first, but I'm not sure that's the case when you come to toddlers, because having had toddlers, charity and patience is a bit of a struggle sometimes. So I imagine that's where you're going next. But I think this is key for me, because I got a four-year-old, a two-year-old, and a baby on the way. And so that's the really hard one, because especially if you have these toddlers that act up, and we've got one now that he's a little boy who just, you know, he doesn't want to sit. He doesn't want to sit yeah. still for an hour and a half or 2 hours. He just doesn't want to do it. So I'm really curious about that. I mean, how do you handle that? How do you handle toddlers?
So, you know, toddlers are interesting. And so, you know, because they start to develop little personalities and, you know, and different things like that, people begin to, you know, like you start to think of them. How do I put this? You start to think of them as people, but you know, I mean, they are people. I'm not trying to take that away from that. But what I always tell people in a marriage class, and now parents don't get upset at me about this, but this is very important, and it's actually very true, that you have to train children like you train a dog. Because what is the primary difference between man and beast. It's the use of reason. It's he has an immortal soul, and he has the use of reason. Well, kids don't have the use of reason yet. They haven't developed to that point to be able to. They have the potential of getting there, but until they do, you have to think to yourself, my child is very much like an animal in that sense. Maybe some kids, parents don't have any trouble imagining their kids as animals, but so yeah. but you know, depending on the day maybe, or whatever it might be, but it's so, I'm not saying that your child is just as important as a dog. Obviously they're much more important than an ant, just that some animal. But in terms of training them, it's very much the same. How would you train a dog to do things that you want it to do? If it misbehaves, you correct it, you scold it, you even punish it, to so it has, you know, sort of like I have the wrong, and immediately afterwards I have the repercussions for the wrong, or the correction for the wrong. And if they do good, well, then a dog, you say good boy, and you treat it, and you give it a treat and do those things. Now, I'm not saying you need to have like a pocket full of snacks for your kid at church. That's not the goal for this, but the sentiment is that, you know, if a child is misbehaving at church, you have to correct it right away, you know, like correct it and do so. So that they, because then you can't necessarily wait till afterwards to say, you know, hey, an hour and a half ago, you know, you're in the car ride home, an hour and a half ago, you were not behaving during the offertory part of the mass, and that was bad. That doesn't mean anything to that child.
2-year-old's like an hour and a half.
exactly.
Five minutes ago for a 2-year-old is
yeah,
nothing.
Yeah. It has to be. It has to be action reaction. You know, it has to be in the moment. Don't miss the opportunity.
So can I ask, Father? I'm sorry. Because this is something I remember in the conversation with my parents that they said, they said exactly what you say, that you have to have a reaction. But they really stressed that you had to make sure that you do it in a way that the children don't, not fear, but they still like to come to church. I mean, they. It's not something that they know they're going to come, they're going to be bad, and they're going to get punished or spanked or whatever it is. And so they end up, as they grow up, they don't want to come to church. And so maybe, I know it's a hard thing to clarify, because it really is, it is individual cases. Some kids, I think, do sometimes need to be swatted on the butt, you know, in extreme cases. But how do you do that? How do you do that in a way so that they also want to be in church,
so, I suppose? So I think that is a really good point, and that's something that I was going to talk about too, is that what is included in part of the duty of a parent with a small child in church is, once they are able to, you know, like I said, they're a toddler, they're 2, 3, 4 years old, except, you know, that type of thing. And then obviously it sort of gradates, you know, up, or you have higher expectations, you're able to do more as they get a little bit older and things like that. But it is a training aspect of it. So even when they're behaving and they're doing good in church, like you want them to, you want to train them to mass and what's going on and things like that. And so I think some of the most effective aspects of that is when I see that, like, that toddler is right beside a father or a mother, and that, you know, as a parent, you just want to read your missal and follow along with the mass so you can get something out of it yourself. But your whole life needs to be this dedication to, you know, your children first, and that includes your mass attendance. And so it's some of the most edifying things to see is when, you know, a father is there, you know, kneeling next to his son or daughter, and, you know, kind of has like an arm around them or something like that. And then it's like pointing out either maybe they have like a little kiddie book that has like pictures of the mass and like, oh, this is what Father's doing now. Like this is, you know, this type of thing here. Or sometimes I'll hear fathers, you know, tell their children like, now pay attention, like right before the consecration, pay attention. Here comes Jesus. Here he comes. You'll see him. Did you see Jesus lifted up high? Look, there he is, elevated into the air, you know, and just whispering these things to them. It was funny. One time I remember it was in a mission mass. And so it's a small little room, same mass for a group of people. And there's a bunch of little kids there. And as I was doing the consecration, I hear the father do just that. He says, I hear him go, pay attention, here comes Jesus. And it was before the consecration of the wine, the precious blood. And as I elevated the chalice, the child must have looked down, got distracted by something or whatever it was. It's because he's like, look, there he is, there's Jesus. And then I genuflected down again after the elevation, and I just heard, do it again, Father, from the little kid, you know. And so little kid logic.
Yeah,
so exactly. So it was just really wonderful, you know. And I almost started dying laughing. But I
had a story like that too, Father. That my daughter was around two or three, and I try when I can, you know, to do the same. You know, okay, here, you know. No, here's Jesus, our Lord's coming. And so one of the first times after I had done that, so the next Sunday, she was just sitting next to me, and she just says really loud, there's our Lord, like yells it during the consecration, our Jesus.
Yeah, you're right. And nobody minds, you know what I mean? Like that's one of those good noises, you know, honestly. Right. Yes, you want to say, if it's out loud, you want to say, okay, yes, but shh, you just quiet, we're a church, but quietly. Right. But don't, in something like that, don't shush them or, you know, punt or be come across as being scolding to them in that moment, because that's a good thing. That is a good, you know, that if they're paying attention and they're pointing out, look, there's Jesus. All you want to do is very kindly and nicely reaffirm them in that, and but say, but remember, we're a church, so we don't yell it. So we don't say it really loud, you know, like, but very good. That's, you know, that you want to reaffirm those things if that happens. Don't worry. You know, again, if somebody's mad at that, that's their problem. If a priest is mad at that, that's his problem. That's not your problem. That is a fruit of good parenting and good training of your children in the attendance of Mass. They recognize it. Another really funny example of that was, there was a little boy, and his dad would do the same thing, you know, like, oh, look, here comes Jesus. And he was like two, you know, or whatever, one, you know, whatever it was. But, you know, little kids don't always associate the right things with them. And he was in that, you know, how little children go through this sort of like that stranger danger phase where they see people that aren't their parents and that are adults, and they just are afraid of them. Well, he was terrified of me, and I have no idea why, but he was terrified of me. And so I was visiting their house, and anytime I would like see him or visit, you'd see him sort of back up. And I saw him across the room. He came into the living room. I was talking to his father, and his dad goes, oh, you have to see this. Watch this. And he goes, he looks at the little boy who's like standing on the other side of the room, kind of like scared look and just staring at me. He goes, hey, little buddy, like, who's here? Look who's here. Who is that sitting on the couch? He just goes, he like terrified look. He goes, Jesus. because every time during Mass, during the elevation, he said, oh, look, there's Jesus. There's Jesus. And he thought he was talking about me and not the host. He's like, so apparently my kid's terrified of our Lord, you know, like, so it's like,
parenting's hard.
I told him, I said, I've been mistaken for many a thing, but I've never been mistaken for God. So that's it's pretty good, you know. So it's got an upgrade on that one. But that's the type of thing. And that's the other part to it. You know, people sometimes want to understand like the correction aspect of it. But the doing the good is just as important. You know, that part of it, you know, if a kid behaves well overall, all through Mass, right, does a good job, you need to reward that afterwards. You know, you need to be like, hey, buddy, that was, you did a really good job today at Mass. You know, maybe the reward is if there's coffee and donuts, they get a donut after Mass if they've behaved themselves. You know, maybe if your church doesn't have something like that, maybe you take them out for a donut or pastry or do something like that, just because again, it's just rewarding the good. You want them to be incentivized. They don't understand it. Everything that's going on around them. They don't understand why they have to stay still and why they have to be quiet necessarily. So you want to reward them just for the fact that they follow through and that they do a good job. You know, you don't continue that, you know, they're 17, like, hey, good job again today, buddy. Here's some more donuts, you know. But I mean, like, but you do, like, in that very formative phase, you want to reinforce that by just something nice, you know, that you're proud of them, that, you know, that you're happy that they did that and they get a little treat because of it. You know, it doesn't have to be anything super. It just has to be something that they like and they know that they're appreciated. And so that's an important aspect to that. However, getting back to the corrective part of it, it is also, don't be afraid that the correction is going to turn them off from church, because it won't. They're too young, you know, to really associate all those things together. So I think that's an important part too, is that the reality is that the reason early on as toddlers that they're not doing well at staying still or paying attention and things like that is because they have no real understanding of what church is and what, you know, like, they'll grow into understanding that. And you'll help them by doing those little things, showing them along, teaching them, you know, kind of having that interactive part of like how to follow Mass, how to know what part you're at, you know. Oh, sorry, along with that too, bring your kids up to communion, to the communion rail, your little tykes, you know. Me and all the priests here at St. Gertrude's, I know it's not everybody that the priests that do that, but me and all the priests that work with us here at St. Gertrude's, if there's a little non-communion age child, we always just, you know, give them a little blessing at the communion rail, just sign out of the cross over them, you know. And but that's part of them to understand. It's a good example to see, you know, they go up, they kneel down, they watch mom or dad receive Holy Communion, they get their little blessing, they now want to do like you do, you know. And so that's an important aspect too. Bring them on up. Hopefully some of the priests out there listen to this and think, yeah, you know what, I can, you know, it does takes no effort to kind of just give one of these, you know, doesn't hurt anybody, you know, just be nice, priests, you know, like, it's a baby, come on, you know. So just do the nice thing, bless the baby, everybody's happy, you know, like, that's wonderful. And but it's also just that good example of a parent receiving Holy Communion, the kids seeing what they're doing, they start to eventually want to. You always get the little toddlers that stick out their tongues expecting Holy Communion. When they get close to that Holy Communion age and they are not necessarily quite there yet, but they're getting closer, try to train them to put their finger over their mouth so they don't get accidental First Communion, you know. So
sure. It's going to be tough for a priest. I believe you. That is a parent's issue rather than the priest. I mean, priest, I'm sure he knows many of the children, but boy, in a large parish, you could like remembering every single one who hasn't received communion.
Yeah, especially if somebody's visiting, you know, like, that's a big thing, right? Like here at St. Gertrude's, in particular, we have a lot of visitors come in, and, you know, we generally know our own, but, you know, a visitor comes in and it's sort of like borderline, you're like, And sometimes you have like, you're about to give communion, you have the mom just like shoot the arm out and like, no, stop. So that's an important aspect, but yeah, it is such a real good part of that training. And it gives them another part of Mass where they're not just having to sit still. They get to walk up, mm-hmm. they get to kneel down, they get to be in a different spot, they get to see something that they probably can't see. That's another part of why kids struggle to stay still and pay attention during Mass, in addition to just being kids, is that, remember, you're kneeling there and you can see over everybody. He's standing on the kneeler and he can't see anything, you know? And so like, that's a lot of times that's a, you know, another thing, you're like, you gotta stay still, you're in Mass. Like, I'm just staring at the back of his head. I don't know what the heck's going on. Like, you know, so, right. So it's, so that's a, you know, another aspect to be sort of sympathetic about, you know, and you don't correct every little nudge and twitch or whatever they make, because they're going to, that's too much. That's, then your corrections lose all purpose, but, you know, but do be corrective if they're turning around, then, you know, as they get, you know, as development has it be, you know, the more that they're able to sort of start understanding what's going on, the more you try to make them focus on what they're actually being at and things like that, and teach them more about what's they're doing. Now, those who, like I said, but if they do misbehave, that's where the correction needs to come in. And again, training a kid is like training a dog. And so that correction, yeah, if, you know, if they are turning around, you can reach over and you can kind of like grab their head and, you know, turn them back again, or tell them to pay attention or something like that, as they get old enough to, you, where you expect them to be able to do something along those lines, you can tell them no talking, whatever. But if they start misbehaving to a point where you now have to take them out of Mass, which does happen, obviously, but you know, they're now a toddler, and you know that, okay, they at least know they shouldn't be talking, or they at least know they shouldn't be making a bunch of noise, and I should, you know, they at least, I have the expectation, my expectation is now they shouldn't be, I shouldn't be taking them out of church, really, or I shouldn't be taking them out often, or whatever it is, or you're getting to that point where you're starting to have that development of, okay, we should be moving towards not taking you out of church at this point in time, then you have to remember exactly how little kids think in those things. What you're telling them to do is to be quiet, to sit, kneel still, and to, you know, not have any kind, not like their normal toys and, you know, different distractions around them. And that's not naturally what a kid wants to do. So you have to make them have the reason to do that, because they don't understand everything that's going on around them. And so you need to make them have the reason to do that. And the way to do that is that at a certain point along the way, when it starts to be like, no, when I tell you, you need to be quiet, and you should be able, you might not know what's going on, but you should know that I'm supposed to be quiet, at least because I told you to be quiet. Then what you have to realize, what they're doing, is they realize that if I make noise, I get to go out of church.
Right.
If I'm out of church, I can walk around, and if I'm out exactly. of church, I can, you know, stand up and I can make more noise, and it's not as much problem with that and everything. And so it goes from the kid not knowing anything as a baby and just needing to go out because he's crying, to becoming a kid realizing that, oh, if I make noise or if I misbehave, I get to go out. As soon as that becomes the reality, outside the church needs to be worse than inside staying still and quiet. Right. And that is absolutely key. Outside needs to be worse, and that's the only way to get that to become reality. I'll tell you a hilarious, one of the funniest stories. This would be before I was a priest. When CMRI first came to Massachusetts, I was working in commercial real estate at the time, and I ended up being the one who like brokered a deal for them, you know, for to get a lease, or like to, they were coming twice a month, I think. And it was, so we rented out a conference room in an office building that that was part of this large commercial real estate company. And so I was a parishioner and property manager at the same time for CMRI, for Sister Bernadette. And we were in this conference room, and it was on the third floor of the building. And it was just like pretty much right next to the elevator. You got out the elevator, and you turned, and it was pretty close by. Well, I was in the back. I was in the choir there at the chapel. And during the mass, this little kid was, you know, not behaving. And at a certain point, the father had had enough, and he stood up, took the kid by the hand, and walked out the door. And saying, you know, genuflex, walks out the door, turns left around out the doorway. And then you didn't really hear anything until all of a sudden you heard, "No, Daddy, no!" And then you heard bing, and the elevator doors closed, and you didn't hear anything more after that. They went on an elevator ride, and it wasn't gonna be a fun elevator ride. And the last thing you heard before the doors closed with that bing from the elevator was, "No, Daddy, no!" And I almost fell over laughing. It was one of the funniest things I had ever heard. You know, that kid knew what he was going to get as soon as he walked in that elevator door. It was like a mobster walking into a basement apartment, you know, like he just knows that's not a good sign. And so that little boy, he learned a little lesson. But it was, I always think that as like a really good example, like, you know, the outside of that needs to be worse than sitting still, because then they're not going to want to, when you tell them, "Hey, be quiet. Hey, sit still. Stop hitting your sister, or do, stop being a nudge," or whatever it is. And then you say, and then he doesn't, you say, "Do you want to go out?" Then it's like, "No." No, I'll sit still. Thank you very much. You know, and that's part of training kids. You got to make that outside worse than otherwise they're just incentivized to make noise and to be a nudge so that they can get out and they can kind of run around and play and everything like that. And that's not what you want. You want to, it has to be a training towards that end of bringing them to sit still, to, and then by making it so like, "Oh, I just better listen and I better sit still," now you have the opportunity to show them all those aspects of mass and get them to love the mass and get them to, you know, say their prayers. And, you know, like I said, they're in church, they do a good job, you take them over, you light a candle at a shrine, you know, you say a little prayer there with them, and kids love doing that. Go take them to visit a statue that is their, you know, their patron or one of their favorite statues, or, you know, take them around, just do a little something with them after mass to see, you know, different aspects of the chapel. You know, I mean, again, every church is different and every church has different amounts of things that they can do. But, you know, here at St. Gertrude's, we're fortunate to have a ton of statues and shrines and changing shrines and all sorts of different things. And so it's just bring them around, light a candle, do something, you know, nice with that, because that makes them even more attached to those prayers and to those devotions, and then by extension to the mass, and they know that they're appreciated. And especially fathers, you know, it's good for mothers to do this too. I'm not discounting moms doing this, but especially for fathers, there's something about little children, if their dad can put their arm around them and whisper what's going on at the mass, or he takes them over to a shrine and lights a candle and kneels and says a prayer with them. The fact that fathers have to go out and work all day, and they demand that certain respect, being the man of the house and everything like that. That there's something very special for children to have, like a little. This is a little quiet alone time with just me and dad, you know, that we're going to light a candle. We're going to go do this thing or whatever, you know, like that's really, and it gets them to appreciate and to love those aspects of the church.
But, well, that's something I remember my parents saying too, that really stuck with me, that obviously, as you say, exactly. And especially how important is it that we have, you know, we're a good example. And that started with them. You know, they said that language is so important. They both studied literature and language in university, and they said one of the biggest things was when they said, it's not we have to go to Mass, it's we get to go to Mass. Mm-hmm. And that's a really profound thing. That was something that they told me, I think, when we did the podcast a couple years ago, and that really stuck with me, because it's like, that's an incredible difference if you think about it. It's like, okay, it's one word, yes, whatever, but we have to go. I mean, that's a duty. We have to go to Mass. Yeah, we're getting up early. Many people have to drive an hour or two. I mean, for Catholics, I mean, the world around us, Sunday is their rest day, right? They sleep in, they eat junk, and they watch football all day long. And obviously for us, it's not that way. So, you know, our baser instincts are, we have to go to church. But I mean, if we teach them that when they're little, of course that's what they're going to think. Our language matters. So if we say, hey guys, today, we get to do this. This is the most important thing we're going to do all week, and we are privileged and honored. And that,
yes,
I think, is also a huge, huge thing that my parents have taught us growing up.
And it also brings me to my next point of that training a child is repetition. You know, that is also to go with it. That if you are fortunate enough to live at a place where you can go to daily Mass, go as often as you can. I mean, you know, if there's been a couple of families here that, you know, have like a little toddler, and they show up pretty much every single day to Mass. And we would joke like, oh yeah, you know, so-and-so, like the two-year-old, he's a daily communicant at St. Gertrude's, you know, because they'd be here every single day. But guess what? Those kids are really good at behavior at church, because you know, he might be only 2 or 3 years old, but he does it all the time. And so like they learn more quickly that way. It's much harder if you only have Mass once a month at a mission to get a child to understand what is church even to be quiet at, because you just don't, and parents at missions know the struggle is harder than if you are at an actual church. If you're in a mission, they know it's more difficult to get them to understand that. Yeah, you get a little bit more intimacy if you're in that tight quarters, but you don't get the frequency of that. And to go along with that is also that the frequency at home, you need to start also having daily, you know, during family prayers, where you make them kneel down and for time for prayers. You know, if you're at home and it's like the family rosary time, and like, okay, now like little Johnny, you're going to come over here and we're all going to kneel down. We're all going to be quiet. We're all going to pray. And they get corrected just like they do at church. Then they start to associate prayer time is quiet time. Prayer time is time that we don't play and we sit still. And when you can reinforce it at home every single day, and if you can couple that with frequent Mass attendance, then they will learn very quickly. I mean, they're kids. They're not always going to be perfect. You know what I mean? Like you're going to have retrograde days, but overall, the overarching aspect of it, they'll improve. And then, and so that's an important reality. And then again, back on the good example part of it, they seeing you doing the things, they seeing you taking time to stop at a shrine in the church or light candle or something like that, them seeing you go to confession, them seeing you going to communion, why it's good to bring up the little tykes with you to the communion rail, you know, them witnessing you do these things repeatedly, make them know that it's not just good for them, it's good for mom, it's good for dad, it's good for, and then it must be good for me. It's something I want to do now. I want to see these things. And when they get old enough to start understanding it more, then you explain, yeah, you know, we all need to confess our sins, and it's good. We get clean, you know, that's why I go into, I'm going to go to confession now, you know, and yeah, we all want to go to communion and like that. So, you know, this is, these are good things for them to witness and to see, because then they're encouraged to do likewise. And then I think the next portion to get to is, that's, you know, it, unless there's something else you want to ask about toddlers in general. But I think the next portion is that point where they are now getting towards First Communion time. Then, you know, you probably have the expectation that they're going to behave themselves in church, you know, at least overall. You know, now is really the time to now get them, as they start to understand and be able to recognize our Lord in the Blessed Sacrament and sort of what's going on in Mass, now you take it the next step further. Start to get them to see what's going on in the church, to get them, and then to get them interested in those things of the church. And so, like, if it's a young boy and now he's 7 years old and he's receiving Holy Communion and things like that, then, you know, he should be now working on trying to become a server. You know, he should, you know, get him starting to study the Latin, to make the responses, and learn to become a server for Mass, because he's received First Communion. He should learn to serve. You know, you can start before, right, a little bit before his First Communion, so that once he's ready to go, he's ready to go to do that. You know, have you know, girls that they, you know, if they're interested in singing, you know, start to introduce them to that stuff, you know, and especially if a parent's able to be in the choir, maybe not right away they're able to sing in the choir, because that takes a little bit more training and time and things like that, but maybe you know, talk to your choir director or talk to the priest or something like that, and see, would it be all right that, you know, they're really well behaved, they want to one day sing in the choir. Is it okay if they come and sit with me in choir, you know, and pay attention? You know, sometimes there might not be enough space for such a thing to happen, or if it's too much of a distraction or something like that, you know, the choir has to come first for that. But at the same time, if you are able to at least start introducing them to it, then great. You know, here at St. Gertrude's, we're fortunate enough. I mean, this is one of the beautiful things about having a Catholic school. You know, Catholic school, we have the youngest group of school kids that we've ever had as a, like, an overall thing. It's just one of those weird generational switches where most of our kids are really, really young. But we still have high Mass every single day. And those little kids, they learn to sing it, you know, and because
every day, Father. Sorry. High Mass every day. Wow.
High Mass, cool. And sermon every single day. So, you know, it's part of going to school. You know, then, and the boys all learn how to serve. They all learn how to become, you know, work their way through the ranks from torchbearer to acolytes to thurifer to MCs for solemn masses and pontifical masses, and how to be a chaplain for the bishop and everything. They're all in grade school, you know, and our school choir right now, you know, again, because there's so little that, you know, we only expect so much out of them. But up until maybe a year or two ago, you know, that was the, if we just needed to, like, you know, break glass for emergency high Mass, you know, have the school kids do it, and, you know, and they would sing some really beautiful pieces and everything, and it's just training all the time, and it's part of their daily school activity, is that they're trained to do these things. And, you know, having a high Mass when you have a school shouldn't be all that much of an accomplishment if you're going at it every single day, you know. And that's there's a teacher or one or two to sing with them. I think, you know, one of the sisters and one of the teachers sings with them, but still, you know, it's not two voices singing, it's a multitude of voices singing. And, you know, some of the real little tykes, well, they get some of the hymns, you know, and maybe like the Kyrie and things like that or whatever. But you know, they're still little kids and they're singing mass and everything because they just, that's part of their training. Training is good. You know, training is a good thing and they love and appreciate it. And so, you know, that's one of those aspects here. That is a benefit. And, you know, I don't know, it's not as you know, it's probably not super common in all of the churches, but it's something that could be more common with some effort and some time.
You know? I'd never heard that before, Father. That blows me away. It just blows me away just thinking about it. Just how you compare that to a public school or something, you know, your first, you wake up, your first hour of your day, or I mean, I guess you're getting ready, your second hour of your day or whatever, you're going in, you're having a high mass every day. And that's what's starting off your training and your learning. That's awesome. That's incredible. Talk about getting off to a good way of life. Wow.
Yeah. Yesterday was St. Joseph's feast day. So we had it was just the school kids, but we had a solemn high mass. Wow. And with the procession out to the health hall, the parish hall, and then with the kids singing, you know, processional song on the way out there, and then we did the blessing of hot cross buns and donated food for the poor, and then, you know, song out and everything like that and all of that. So solemn high mass, sacred ministers, everything along those lines, in, you know, and it's just done with the school kids. And, you know, it's like, oh yeah, today's the such and such a feast day, that probably deserves a solemn mass, we have the priests around, we're that's what we're doing, and then that's it. Like, no more questions asked, it is what it is, you know. And so, and we'll get it done. And yeah, I mean, on those ones, sometimes when it's like a big feast like St. Joseph, I should say, like, some of the homeschool kids that know how to serve well joined and added, because you can have, you know, a whole bunch of servers and things like that. And so we added some of the homeschool kids to join with us. But the core of it all is the school for that aspect. And if the homeschool kids didn't come, we would have done a solemn high mass. It wouldn't have changed a thing. So so that's, you know, that's really, yeah, it's really good. And so it's, I think to put it in perspective, I think we only have one high schooler in the entire school right now. And like a small handful of, like, you know, small handful of middle schoolers, and then the rest are elementary school kids, and we're still able to do those things. And so
there's a will, there's a way. Yeah,
exactly. And then, like I said, with that, every school mass, they get a sermon too, you know, again. Wow. You know, it doesn't take much effort for a priest to put together 5 to 10 minute sermon for the feast of the day. You know, it just takes the wherewithal and the desire to do it, and those kids learn about saints every single day. But that's diversion, you know, I mean, that's getting a little bit off topic, but back to the training of kids. If you have a good Catholic school at your disposal where they're going to teach them to sing and they're going to teach them to serve, you know, that's one of those sort of like organs of the church functioning, you know, to greater usage of your kids' appreciation of learning about mass and the importance of it and everything like that, when they have that regular access to it and that regular instruction in it. And then again, to go along with that. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, just real quick, I was just going to say, I often think if I hadn't been an altar boy, I don't know if I would have kept my faith. I mean, it's hard to say, obviously it's all hypothetical, but I know for sure it was a big part of what, you know, it was what kept me going. Kind of, it was cool, I guess. I mean, that's not the right reason, but I mean, it was a cool thing to do. I don't know how to describe it, but it was what, you know, kept me interested, and I wanted to go because, you know, this is what the guys, that's what they were doing, and I wanted to do that. And eventually, you know, it turned into, I did love to do it for the right reasons. But yeah, at the beginning, I can't say it was always because I wanted to serve God.
Yeah, but it was. But I mean, that's the thing.
It was respectable.
That's the thing is that it's like that's that Catholic community aspect of it that you have, mm-hmm. like that it becomes like almost like a boys fraternity, as it were, or a team that it is. That it's like, right. you know, we're the altar boys. We're the ones that get to serve, and then like we've always like we've. Got like this. It has its own little culture, at least here at St. Gertrude's, anyways, and also at St. Hugh. That the boys that are, you know, torchbearers want to become acolytes. The boys that are acolytes want to become thurifer. The boys that are thurifer want to learn how to become master of ceremonies and have these responsibilities. And that sort of atmosphere feeds off itself. That they're sort of almost competing. To like move up and get a right. chance to do the next thing. And, you know, I wouldn't necessarily, you know, like, or we, you know, you show up on a Saturday and there's like extra kids kicking around and, you know, and maybe I have a private mass and somebody's like, oh, Father, are you going to say mass soon? Yeah. In about 5 minutes, can I serve you mass? Like, yeah. Okay. Like, come on, you know, wow. like that's, you know, and so it's just, you know, it breeds really good, you know, devotion in the boys. And that's what fosters as well vocations to the priesthood, if they're going to have them, you know, is to start being involved in the liturgy in that way. That's what you want to come from those means of serving mass in that way as potential vocations to come. And so that's a, you know, important aspect of it too. Along with kind of getting them involved is probably one point of correction for kids as they get a little older and even much older. This correction probably for even some adults at this point in time. Bathroom. Go to the bathroom. Have your kids go to the bathroom before church. You know, I remember I didn't grow up going to church very often. But when I was a little kid, if we did go to church, on the off chance that we did, my mom would say to me, like, did you go to the bathroom before we left the house? No. Like, why didn't you go to the bathroom? Because I don't have to. Go try, you know? and on a rare occasion, like if we got to church and we didn't get a chance to go before we left, maybe we're running a little late or something like that. The way our church was set up, our Novus Ordo church was set up, was there was like a T, and there were two side chapels facing like the sides of the Novus Ordo sanctuary. So like, and then there's the main part of the center. And so we always kind of came in through the back alley to into the parking lot. So we always came through a back entrance way, which put us in one of those side things. And behind where the sanctuary was, from that side, there was a doorway that you went through. And when you walked through that door, you entered a hallway. And it was the first door on the left in that hallway was the bathroom. The second door on the left was the Novus Ordo confession room, you know, kind of like you didn't have a confessional, you had a confession room. So there was that Novus Ordo confession room. And then if you kept straight, you ended up in the sacristy. And so over the door that entered to that back hallway were the green and the red lights that were there to indicate if somebody was in confession. Well, because I was just a little tyke, and I only associated that with going to the bathroom. I thought that was that, like when the light was green, the bathroom was free. When the light was red, it must be occupied. And then, and once mass started, there was no more confession, so the light would go out. And because my parents would never let me go to the bathroom as soon as the mass started, then that I associated that when the light goes out, nobody's allowed in the bathroom. and so that was my mindset in towards it. But it was because once mass started, we were not allowed to go to the bathroom, like, period. Unless you were going to get sick, you were not allowed to go to the bathroom. You either went before you got there, or you went when you first got there before church started. When church started, you were staying in that seat, and I don't care if you're saying you have to go to the bathroom. And so parents, you tell your kids to go to the bathroom, you tell them if they don't feel like they have to try, and then you make sure that they don't leave to go to the bathroom. Now, obviously, there's a certain age that begins to apply, you know what I mean? Like you don't want accidents from a kid that just got out of diapers or something like that necessarily.
Right.
But, but it's not too long after that you can expect a kid to hold his bladder for an hour. You know what I mean? Like that's not a deep expectation to do so. And because guess what? You're distracting. That's an unnecessary distraction when it's like, oh, out the door you go to the bathroom. And then, and in those times, you kids can miss, sometimes they'll miss one of the principal parts of Mass. And very few people think about the fact, like, if you went to the bathroom unnecessarily and you went during the offertory consecration or the priest's communion, you've not, let's say you're a 9-year-old boy and you walked out and did that. Well, you didn't complete your attendance at Mass. You didn't fulfill your Sunday obligation because you went out during the offertory and you just wanted to have a halftime break, basically. And right. For a priest who's preaching a sermon, that is definitely not halftime. People too often I see people, even sometimes young adults or teenagers or something like that, but walk out during the sermon time and to like go to the bathroom, and then it's like, what are you doing? This is not a break, this is not halftime. If I have an obligation to preach to the congregation, then to some degree there must be an obligation in return to listen, and so it's, that's an important time of instruction. It's an important time of paying attention. And it's also disrespectful and distracting if it's during the sermon to walk out unnecessarily like that. Like I said, kid crying, no problem with that. But, but for somebody who should be staying put, and again, I understand people might get sick or people might have something go wrong and whatever. I'm not talking about those instances. But I think if we're honest with ourselves, those are few and far between in reality. And so it's, it's just don't do those things. So that's a big point. Bathroom, go beforehand, just like you would tell your kids to do if you're going on a ride to go to vacation, or you're going to grandma's house, if you paid $40 to go to see, a baseball game or an ice skating event or something like that, you would tell your kids to go to the bathroom before the started. You wouldn't be saying like, all right, well, the dance has started, or the concert has started of we're there to listen to the symphony or something like that, and the concert starts and 5 minutes into the symphony, 10 minutes into the symphony, like, Dad, I gotta go to the bathroom. You mean like really? We just got here. Like, I told you to go beforehand. Now we have to miss a chunk of this. Well, if you're going to do that because, of entertainment, how much more for the Mass? So that's an important point with that. And then one last point as an overall thing, but I think it's really, really important, and as a correction, is that sometimes I see parents will have like older kids, and they'll be the ones oftentimes taking the kid out of church. And it's like, I applaud them for being on top of like having the kid taken out of church because he's crying or he's misbehaving or doing whatever. And then, but Unless you are completely got your hands full with, like, maybe you have three toddlers and one, you know, and one of your kids is 13 years old, you know, like, okay, well, I got to juggle these other two. So, you know, can you take Timmy out, you know, and just be on the vegetable with them? Fine. Like, I'm not talking about the one-off things or the occasional aspect of it. That's fine. But don't let that be the habitual thing, because it is the duty of the parents to take the children out. It is the duty of the parents to make sure that even their older kids get to attend and pay attention and grow from their fruitful attendance at Mass. It's the duty of the parents to provide the correction to children when they're misbehaving. It's important that those little children see the person in authority telling them, no, stop that, you know, behave yourself, you will be quiet, you know, we're gonna come out here. Like, that's it is important that it comes almost as much as possible from the parents, not the older sibling. Yes, sometimes it becomes necessary, I understand that, but it should for the most part be from the parents. It's not your 14-year-old daughter's responsibility to miss Mass. It's you know, or portions of the Mass to take kids out. It's your duty to do that as a father or mother.
Now, I think I had one question about it, and I think it all makes sense. I'm really, again, glad that you came on for this. It helps me with a few things too. I mean, it can be right in the middle of you know, one getting out of being a toddler and one in the middle of it. But I guess one question I had, and I've had this because I think I've even had people mention it or it's come up. How do you handle it as someone who doesn't have the kids? So you're the bystander. You're the one who is being disrupted by a loud child. And obviously, as you said, generally just, you know, handle it with patience and charity. I think that's fairly obvious. Yeah. But what about in the extreme cases? I mean, I guess that my question for you, Father, is there ever a case ever when a bystander, one of the other parishioners, should say something to the parents? Because I think that obviously, again, normally not, but I think there have been parishes where there's a phlegmatic priest maybe, or just doesn't bother him, et cetera. I don't know. Is there ever a reason for another parishioner to approach parents?
Yes, but it's a little delicate, you know. Mm. So it's like, so for instance, it's you know, I think the position of being in the pew should be one of patience overall. And if you have issue, maybe sort of raise it to the priest first, like, hey, this is something that's been going on for a little while. I don't know if you realized it or realized that remember, we have our backs to people for the most part too, so we don't always know if it's the same person that's the offender or not, or things like that, and just kind of bringing it to our attention. But, you know, sometimes the thing that is frustrating for people is that when it becomes a new person coming in. And it's like, well, we were having like these nice peaceful masses, and then all of a sudden this new family comes in, you know, and it's like, well, you know, especially if they've just come over from the Novus Ordo or converts or something like that, it's like, listen, they might intellectually understand where they are at now for the church, but then you have to remember the Novus Ordo is completely devoid of all Catholic culture whatsoever. And so you have to be like really patient and merciful with those people, that they'll learn. They'll get to realize it. And yeah, maybe at some point something gets mentioned to them by the priest, or maybe a sort of like a general point gets made in a sermon or a bulletin or something like that, to try to like gently coax them along. But we don't want to scare them off because they, you know, like, oh, well, this is our first time in a Latin Mass. Your kid's too loud. Rawr! You know, like, that's, I mean, they're gone. You know, I mean, that's, sure. You know, we want to be welcoming and friendly to people. And sometimes that means just getting over yourself and being like, okay, you know, I got to be patient, because, you know, this is a family of souls that I want to be having the fruits of the Mass and the sacraments and the faith and everything like that. But at times, yeah, you know, at times, I think you have to be very honest with yourself too. You have to think to yourself, am I the person that has a real tactful way that usually gets good responses out of people and is able to do something in a way that it, like, is really bears good fruit? Or am I the one, or am I wanting to say this just because I'm frustrated? If it's the latter, if you just want to say something because you're just fed up with it, you know, probably should shut your mouth, you know, that's and just offer it up as a sacrifice or bring it up to the priest or something, you know. And just, you know, realize like, okay, you know, it's, I want to say it because of me, not because of, you know, and then, but if you are somebody that generally speaking has a real good disposition about them and can go about it, you know, maybe you do, you know, lend a helping hand. Sometimes that's really welcome, especially from a woman. You know, there are some women that are just very, you know, very nurturing, very motherly, and, you know, might have had a lot of kids, and that might be a good branch over. Or maybe it's a man that has had kids and they've grown up, and but it's somebody that's that is willing to more take the approach of, hey, listen, you know, it seems like you got your hands full a little bit, like, can I help a little, you know, if you need to take the littlest one out, you know, you can leave the other kids with, you know, you can leave them with me. Or if you want to, you know, if you want to put, you know, like, say it's a big family and they got, you know, a son that's 8, you know, and it's, you know, and then you have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old and a, you know, and a baby, you know, and it's like, you know, and you have that kind of like fatherly or grandfatherly way or motherly way about it, and, you know, sometimes just coming up and saying, you know, listen, and you're well known, and you know, you're kind of like one of those people that comes with the furniture of the parish, you know, you know, it's sort of like you come up and say, hey, listen, you know, you know, if Benny, the 8-year-old, you know, if you want him to, you can come up and sit with me, and that way, you know, or the 8 and 5-year-old can come up and sit with me, and because they're relatively well behaved and everything, and I can keep an eye on them while you have to take the kids out, you know, to because they're crying. And sometimes that's just enough to make them self-reflect, oh, I should probably take them out a little bit more. But also it alleviates some of the need of that pull. Sometimes parents don't take their kids out to while they're crying because, like, well, I don't want to leave the other ones unattended, or, you know, or something like that. And so it's combines charity with help, and, you know, or, you know, it, you know, or, hey, can, is there some way I can lend you a helping hand on this, or, you know, whatever. Sometimes going about it in a friendly, tactful way can be very, very beneficial. And so so yes, there are times when that can be done, but it has to be really, I think, carefully thought about and carefully done. And for priests, I mean, I think parents in general, you need to recognize this, that yes, we need to correct things that when it starts becoming problematic, but we're not there to micromanage, to nitpick every little problem, every little transgression or anything like that. That's not our job. That's how you run a cult. That's not, you know, that's not good. You don't want me constantly harping on people or whatever. But if there's an overarching general problem, then yeah, you know, we need to address it. But know this, like, none of us actually want to come to parents and be like, hey, listen, you need to do X, Y, and Z. Like, this is becoming an issue. And in doing so, it's not saying you're bad parents. It's not saying your kids are bad kids. It's not saying that we don't want you there, or, anything like that. Do not take it that way. That's why we are so hesitant to say things, is because we know people do take and have experienced people interpreting it in that light, taking offense to it. Take it for what it is. It's a priest who cares enough about people, both the people at the chapel and you and your family, to come up to you and say something to you about, you know, hey, you need to be more diligent in taking your kids out because it's distracting for the me saying mass, it's distracting for the other people that are attending mass, and yada yada yada. Just take it as instructive and instructive criticism and say, okay, yes, Father, thank you for letting me know, and then implement it. And then I guarantee you, everybody will be happy. Everybody will be fine with it. It's nothing personal. It's just an objective reality. And nobody expects you to have all the answers of parent or know exactly where those lines are or anything like that. Just take it for what it is. As soon as you start taking it personal or, you know, comparatively to other people or something like that, you've gone off the path and you've made the priest's job infinitely harder. And that's really just based in your own pride. You're no longer concerned at that point about what is best for your children and what is best for the other people at the parish. You're now concerned more about how it makes you feel and your own pride and your own wounded pride than you are about the greater good. And that's not the healthy thing to be. So just, you know, if people take that with an appreciative understanding, because that's all we want in return. We just want everything to be a little smoother, a little better. And I think that's really good. And then to add to your question too, I think if you're very close friends with somebody, you know, if you're good friends with another family and you see like, okay, this person, I think in those situations, as a lay person, another lay person there, it's like, whew, you know, you need to take your kids out more. Well, if you have a good friendship or some sort of good solid relationship that with this person, then yeah, maybe I think that's more of an opportunity. And that's also one less thing that the priest has to say. When lay people can do good in correcting and they're the right person for that job, then you're alleviating the priest of one more thing. And also being that guy who has to say one more correction. And, so if you know, like, oh, Bill and Susie are my friends, and so I can go up to them and say something, you know, and they, you know, they're not going to not be my friends afterwards. They'll understand and they'll probably bear good fruit. Then, you know, yeah, you're the guy who should probably go up and talk to them at that point, you know, and so do so and be nice about it, but let them know, like, hey, listen, I think you should probably start doing this or whatever. So.
Got it. Perfect. Thank you, Father. I guess I'll ask you maybe for last words, Father, and we'll wrap it up. I don't know if there's anything you want to say to kind of pull it all together. I mean, advice for parents in general, maybe a one-liner.
Yeah. Remember your primary purpose of marriage. Your primary purpose of marriage is for the begetting and rearing of Catholic children. And a big part of rearing, training, bringing them up is teaching them how to attend Mass well and how to understand what Mass is. And so if it's part of your primary duty, primary purpose for your vocation in life, then God will reward you for doing it. It will bear good fruit in your children, and it'll be an act of charity at times for the people, other people who are attending their masses. And so it is a good and godly thing all around to try to do these things as to the best of your ability.
Perfect. Father, thank you very much. As always, please, everyone who watched this, if you enjoyed it, even if you didn't, please like, share, subscribe, comment, all that stuff. Give Father a hard time in the comment section. He'll take it. But be careful though, because he'll dish it back right at you. But really do please share this, because this is one that I think it is very important. I think it is something that I think it really could help people. I think, you know, it'll help people clarify some things. You know, when should they take children out? How should they handle it if they don't have children? I think that is exactly why Father's here and exactly why we did the show, to be helpful. So we hope you enjoy it. Please, you know, again, do all that stuff. Father, we'll see you around hopefully sometime in the coming weeks. I know we got a philosophy show that we're going to do here. Holy Week's coming up, which I think is the busiest time of the year for a priest. Holy Week, Christmas, I think. So it's not going to be in time super soon, but we're working on it. So we're going to have Father on here again, hopefully in the coming weeks. But please, actually, now that it comes to mind, please pray for the priests for this coming week. I know, I'm sure Father as well, there's so much traveling going on and very little sleep. I know that for sure. So of all the times of the year that they need our prayers, I'd say this is probably number one from my experience. So pray for our priests, pray for Father McKenna. You can pray for me as well if you have an extra minute. And Father, God bless you. We'll see you next time.
God bless you too.